Receiving this message. We are Ken Jennings and John Roderick. We speak to you from our present, which we can only assume is your distant past, the turbulent time that was the early 21st century.
Fearing the great cataclysm that will surely befall our civilization, we began this monumental reference of strange and obscure human knowledge. These recordings represent our attempt to compile and preserve wonders and esoterica that would otherwise be lost.
So whether you're listening from an advanced civilization or have just reinvented the technology to decrypt our transmissions, this is our legacy to you.
This is our time capsule. This is the Omnibus.
You have accessed entry 1411.LV2025, certificate number 29158, The Washing Bear.
All the raccoons participated, whether they could transform or not, and together they generated and focused phenomenal quantities of power. That night, the fighting spirit of the raccoons was greater than ever. In fact, their enthusiasm was so boundless, they began transforming into a parade of frightening specters long before they reached the human city.
Do you have raccoon encounters as part of your Northwest, like, self-mythology?
Not even part of my self-mythology. It's actually just part of my residence. There are raccoons in the backyard. They wander around at night, looking in the trash. When we laid down sod in our front yard last time, we would come out in the morning and find each square of sod lifted up in one corner.
Sure, they were looking. They thought you were hiding money under the corners like my grandmother used to do with her
She had money under
rugs.
Her sod?
Oh. No, she would keep money under the corners of her rugs because she didn't trust the
banks.
Yeah,
these were probably raccoons that knew your grandma. And yeah. I think they were probably looking for grubs.
I don't know
what grubs are, but they're probably under squares of sod.
They eat all kinds of invertebrates as part of their diet, worms and creepy crawlies.
And we have a blackberry bramble out back where a raccoon lives all day because he just sleeps, right? There or she? I don't know. Or she? I don't want to assume. They're nocturnal, right?
Yeah, largely. Although you do sometimes see them during the day. But those tend to be sick or under stress.
Or in a coat worn by a 1920s college student.
That's right. They're trying to pack as many of them into a phone booth as they can.
Are we going to talk about raccoon coats?
I have an upcoming episode of the show where we talk about the college fads of the 1920s. So we'll cover raccoon coats.
We're only covering live raccoons today.
Today we are talking about live raccoons.
I'm very upset. As you can see, I brought my ukulele.
I know.
I brought my straw boater. I'm waving a flag that has a U for university on it.
You're actually sitting on top of a flagpole, which is strange.
It's very painful, but I'm starting to get into it, actually.
Well, it's just lucky that I do keep a flagpole in my house.
On my chair. So we're only talking about live raccoons.
We're going to be talking about a lot of different versions of raccoons. But raccoons do turn up in culture and in fads. They are native to North America. And so within the American myth, raccoons play not an outsized role, but they do reoccur. They're thought of as an American animal.
I think our name from them comes from the Powhatan. Like when John Smith arrived in Virginia, they were one of the new animals he saw.
Yeah.
And with that little Hamburglar mask, I'm sure he was quite smitten.
Yeah. Well, they're adorable. Christopher Columbus didn't know what they were and just called them dogs. He thought they were dogs.
I like how Christopher Columbus comes off as very dumb in this story.
He's like,
hey, look, they have a new kind of dog here. Hey, where's the gold or I'll murder you?
Weird dog. Here, have some smallpox.
In Spanish, they're called mapache.
Mapache.
El mapache, which is from the Aztec Indian, one who takes everything in its hands.
Right. Well, they're known for their dexterity and for the fact that they appear to have very human-like little paws.
They're amazing at Pac-Man, very high Space Invader scores.
They're super good at, well, and they're used to manufacture iPhones, actually.
It's so much more humane than children. It
is, than using children. So they're identified by, they have all these wonderful characteristics, the stripy tail, the Hamburglar mask, the dexterous little paws.
They're so cute, but they're awful. They're misleadingly cute. They're like Gina Lollobrigida.
Gina Lollobrigida is like universally both cute and wonderful. There's no downside to her.
They're like Megyn Kelly. They're like some Fox News blonde.
Oh, I see what you're saying. I am a raccoonophile. So when people talk about them as trash burglars and as, you know, vile, disease-carrying little monsters, I always argue I'm very pro-raccoon.
Well, so I was going to say they're kind of mean, but maybe I should put it a different way because I don't want you to think I'm racist against your hobby. Mm-hmm. They are fearless. Let's put it that way. Like they would come up to our back door of our house and, I don't know, eat my dog's food or something.
Absolutely,
you know, they would just kind of maraud. They like to maraud, I think. And I would walk up to the glass and be like, hey, you know, cut it out. Bang, 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 bang. And they would just stand there and look at me. And if I really started banging, it would get up on its hind legs and go, kah!
Yeah. Oh, they'd come right in the house if you opened the door.
I didn't open the door.
Yeah.
I was kind of afraid they would come in the house and start washing things.
Well, and they have sharp little teeth and sharp little paws, or claws.
Do they attack people? Do people go to the, do 86 Americans go to emergency rooms every year because of raccoons?
In general, a raccoon will go the other way if you approach it, right? I mean, they're not going to, a healthy raccoon isn't going to come into your house and take you on. But if you corner one, they're pretty ferocious. And I do think that they like attack critters all the time. I mean, they're omnivorous. They eat a lot of plants. They eat a lot of bugs and stuff, but they also will eat little,
horse. They'll just take down.
Have you ever seen 40
buffalo?
Raccoons kill a horse?
40 raccoons on the back of a buffalo?
Just like, rawr!
It's amazing.
I think people are afraid that they are, that they're eating cats, but that's more a coyote thing. But raccoons, there's a lot of confusion about them, especially considering that they live among us. I mean, they're in cities, they're around us all the time.
They really love urban environments. That's maybe better for them than...
They adapted, yeah. Right? They're like the pigeon. I mean, a pigeon is formerly a cliff-dwelling bird that figured out that buildings were the new cliffs and so became these like an urban plague when they were just formerly like rock roosting little mountain birds.
And raccoons decided that trash cans were the new grubs.
Were the new like dead animals lying in the forest. I mean, raccoons are scavengers and we give them a lot to scavenge. But you know, they were always thought of as solitary animals, but they're also very social. I think the more modern thinking about them is that they do like, they live in groups sort of gender segregated, like the women. The lady raccoons will form a little community, and then sometimes like boy raccoons will actually band together into little tribes of three or four.
What would you say is the collective noun for a group of raccoons?
Raccoons? Oh, you're talking about like a plague of raccoons
a ukulele of raccoons,
a slurry of raccoons,
slurry.
I don't know, what is it?
I just looked it up. A gaze of raccoons.
A gaze.
I guess because of a mask? It's a bit much.
I don't know. Some of those collective nouns just seem like...
They seem like a prank. Like, let's see if we can get people to start calling raccoons a gaze.
It sounds to me that all those collective names sound like two professors at Princeton were sitting around in one another's offices in the 1920s like, I know, let's give collective names to all the different animals. And they just came up with, you know, they're just throwing stuff out. A gaze of raccoons.
Yeah, they have some air of like, they came from an illuminated medieval manuscript. But I think you're right. I bet this was also a mimeographed list from the 70s.
Yeah, yeah. It seems fake. That seems like something we should investigate for this show.
We can kill it off. Like, the future will never know about it if we don't tell them about it.
The collective noun for everything is a pack.
We're going to delete that whole thing. Corinthian's going to cut all that out where we were talking about a gaze of raccoons. We do not want the future infested by our weird collective nouns.
That's right. It's a pack of raccoons. It's a pack of eagles. It's a pack of salmons.
Pack of everything. Pack of cigarettes.
Yeah, pack of cigarettes. A pack of people.
I just saw a pack of people.
A whole pack.
A pack of fish. Pack of birds.
But raccoons play a large role in like Native American mythologies. sort of across the Americas.
Pocahontas has one in the Disney movie.
Sure she does.
Are you implying that she worships it?
No,
as some kind of god?
They're like tricksters. They're thought of as pulling pranks. There are no raccoons in Alaska. So when I was growing up, raccoons were not a thing. We actually had bears.
Right, you have bears and mooses wandering through your backyard.
Yeah,
right?
The packs of mooses. The bears were the ones that were knocking over trash cans. So when I got to Seattle, I found raccoons to be extremely charming.
Because they're better than bears to you.
Well, they're washing bears. When I was a young man and was drinking and doing and living a vagabond life, I spent a lot of time walking the streets at night.
You were nocturnal as well.
I was.
Lifting up sod corners to look for delicious grubs.
I was solitary, nocturnal, and trash disturbing. And raccoons and I were, you know, we were vying for the same coffee grounds.
You're in the same ecosystem.
But I met raccoons coming through the rye all the time.
And was it like the Looney Tunes cartoon where the coyote and the sheepdog are like, hey, Sam, hey, Ralph.
Well, there
would be like, hey, John, hey, Rocky.
There were some extraordinary encounters where I'd be coming up the sidewalk and a big raccoon would be coming the other way and we would stop and appraise one another, and the raccoon would sit up on its hind legs and do that sort of head bobbing, weaving thing that raccoons do when they're...
That's more interaction than I've ever had on a Seattle sidewalk with a human.
Well, that's true, right? He didn't bury his face in a newspaper. He or she, I mean, we would...
Today, the raccoon would just pretend to look at its cell phone, but this was back in the day.
Or nod and say like, yeah, we should get together sometime, and then keep moving. Seen raccoons fight one another. I've seen a tree with 20 raccoons in
it. This is your version of the Rutger Hauer speech from Blade Runner. I've seen things you wouldn't imagine. Raccoons poking at each other with sticks.
Raccoons twinkling over the Tannhauser gate. But I have raccoons living under my barn in the backyard. I'm routinely competing with them for the fruit that my trees produce.
Do you feed them?
I don't, but I go out in the yard because I also spend some time in my own yard in the middle of the night, just out there in a bathrobe, swinging a sword around, thinking deep thoughts.
Oh, sure. People know this. Like, they've seen the YouTube videos.
Yeah. And so I meet my own raccoons often. And there's a lady raccoon that has a bunch of kits every couple of years. And so she's got four or five little babies trailing behind her, and they all run up the tree when they see me, and I'll stand out there and talk to them. I'm sure I'm annoying as can be because I stand at the foot of the tree.
But you also pay the mortgage and they don't.
That's right.
They don't, like, they don't get a vote.
And when it gets really dry in the end of the summer, when it hasn't rained in 4 months, I'll put water out for them because I feel nice. Like, you know, they get by pretty well, but like when it gets really dry around here, and one of the reasons is I put up a swimming pool one time and I came out in the middle of the night and it was full of raccoons.
Like dead, dead bodies?
No, they were just like, yay!
Pool party!
And I realized, oh, sure, they have to be parched.
Well, they do like water, right?
Well, so they're one of the reasons they're called the washing bear.
You're just asserting they're called the washing bear. I'd just like to say for the record that I don't think they're called the washing bear. They're called raccoons.
They are called raccoons, although their Latin name is Procyon lotor, which means one who washes.
Which means lotion dog.
It means lotion dog. Actually, lotion dog was my, when I ski raced a lot, that was my name.
I still remember in high school renting lotion dog 6. They wouldn't let us have it without an ID, but.
I had it embroidered on the back of my satin jacket. but they're known for washing their food. And it's one of their sort of characteristic moves. You give them something to eat and they'll take it over to some water and wash it off.
You're like, classic raccoon. Look, it's doing its thing.
There it is. It's washing its food.
In German, they're actually called the, how do you pronounce this?
Waschen.
Waschbar?
Waschbar.
What's an A with an umlaut? Bear? Waschbär?
Waschbar. Burr.
You're just making up vowels now.
No, it is. It's an A-E sound.
Waschbär.
Waschbar.
So they literally say, hey, look, it's a waschbär.
They do. And the thing about raccoons in Germany is that they are an invasive species. They were imported to Germany initially in the 1920s.
In the form of a coat, a college coat.
Well, as a fur-bearing animal, right? They were imported there as a kind of like, oh, this is another great fur-producing critter like a mink.
And let's talk about how Europeans just love the Old West. so much, they, like way more than us.
They really do. They fetishize it. They fetishize the Native American. They fetishize cowboy culture.
Like 50 years after American children have given up on the cowboy, there are still cowboy and Indian comic strips in Europe.
Well, there are cowboy and Indian themed bars. There are people in Belgium that live in teepees. There are. I'm not kidding. And they think that the Dukes of Hazzard theme is a
big
pop
homeless
tune.
Problem in Brussels, but I don't know.
No, they have like encampments where it's where and it's a strange amalgam of country and Western music, like this sort of hagiography around the lost Native American peoples who are the noble savage. People. And then there's biker culture connected to it, which is also like rebel culture. There's a lot of Confederate flags in this sort of European subculture. It's a strange American goulash, but that's very, it's like, it's very progressive about Native American rights, but strangely also like
really into cowboys.
Really into cowboys, guns. And Confederate flags.
I guess to them, country music would be like world music, right? It would be like us hearing like, you know, weird kind of Balkan gypsy stuff or mariachi music and just thinking like, ah, so exotic to be in that part of the world. Whereas we hear country music and to us, it's the opposite of cosmopolitan globalism.
Well, the thing about American culture is it's not analogous to like the in terms of its exoticism to like the music of the Amazon rainforest.
Because it's so big.
Everybody's heard American music and country music feels like a subset of rock and roll, but one that in a way they see country music the same way that country music consumers in America see it, which is that it's got integrity. It's closer to the true experience of the working class. It's
you're still imagining a world where people think of country music as people enjoy it for its rootsiness and not for its...
And I think
bastardization pop with a fiddle.
Yeah, I think when you consume it in Belgium, it's you're doing it through a couple of different filters. Or in Germany, you know, in American culture, right? There are Harley Davidson gangs in Sweden, and whatever hoops they have to jump through in order to turn that into a local culture, they manage. You know, I think in probably in the same way that, well, it's not the same way that like the Swedish American Hall here has a culture around it because those are all Swedish immigrants or sons of Swedish immigrants. Mm-hmm. Whereas there, your biker country culture in Sweden.
It's kind of an imagined fetish version.
Yeah, right. And maybe it's like anime culture here.
That's exactly what it is.
Where kids are like, oh, I'm Japanese, you know, like weefei.
I know. Weeaboo.
No, they don't say weeaboo.
No, weeaboo is the name for an obsessive American who's superficially obsessed with Japanese culture.
Well, I know, but it's actually kind of a slur.
Right. Yeah. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to offend the otaku. I heard a great word. I heard tiaboo for one of these people that just watches like British murder mysteries and Downton Abbey.
Oh, that's cute.
You're a tiaboo. But the association of raccoons with Western culture comes from, you know, Davy Crockett's cap. Right.
Right. Well, and also importing it as a fur species into Europe in the 20s was somewhat related to the raccoon coat. Fur coats are an important part of surviving the winter in a pre-Gore-Tex culture. And
lots of Europe is cold in the winter.
Yeah, there are only so many sable, and raccoons grow fast and are big and are cheap and their fur is warm.
It looks pretty good. It looks like pretty good fur. I'm no expert.
It's good fur. So they were imported as fur bearers, and then at a certain point in the 30s, a few of them were released as game animals. Hunters in Germany were bored hunting their normal fox and rabbit.
And they wanted to track the most dangerous game of them all.
That's right, the raccoon. The raccoon, which can...
The Foshbear.
At a full gallop, can move like at 11 miles an hour.
And it's probably not really good eaten.
Well, no, raccoon is a good stew animal. People have always eaten raccoon.
Do you eat your raccoons out under the barn?
No. We are friends. My raccoons and I have I feel like I'm more friends with them probably than they feel like with me.
I thought you were about to say than you are with me. I'm better friends with the raccoons than with you, Ken.
No. I allow you to sit and wash your food. And I mean, I'm as good a friend.
Sit in your kitchen and wash off my trail mix.
But the crows and the
raccoons.
You're
saying if I was in the middle of the road and a raccoon was in the middle of the road, a big Cadillac from your neighborhood is bearing down on us. you leap into action. Who do you nudge aside out of the road?
I feel like I would shout and you would both scamper off. I've seen you scamper.
I scamper quite a bit.
Yeah, you move 11 miles an hour. but there's a myth in Germany that actually Hermann Göring released a bunch of raccoons into the forest as a sort of like sport, like let's create raccoon hunting as a new sport. And that's, I think, untrue.
How many minutes, by the way, before we got to the Nazis?
20.
Yeah. That's about par.
20 minutes before I refer to Göring or Himmler.
I refer to 20 minutes as like the Maginot Line, you know,
right.
That's where the Nazis break right on through every time.
Well, they go around it and we don't, and we never go around the Nazis. We always are standing right there with a giant catcher's mitt. But in World War II, there was an incident where a bomb landed on a raccoon farm and blew up the wall. And a bunch of...
Is this in Germany?
In Germany.
It's probably an Allied bomb. It was an Allied bomb. This is absolutely our fault.
So these are American aminals, which then we freed from captivity with our extremely accurate bombing campaigns. And raccoons, you know, a few dozen raccoons escaped from this fur farm.
Well, talk about the long con.
Yeah.
Like, we're so dedicated to ravaging Europe that we are going to...
That's right.
...trick you into taking our vermin. And then decades later...
80 years later, 80 years later, there are more than a million wild raccoons in Germany.
Wow.
And they are considered an absolute plague upon the land. Raccoons are everywhere. They're living in people's attics. They're terrorizing the Germans. And, you know, raccoons are not really terrifying. But if you're not used to them, if you encounter one in the alley in Nuremberg, I think it's probably more of a surprise than here in Seattle, where it's like, oh, what's up? Yo, bros.
Do you think maybe there's a genetic component? We've been raised to not be threatened by them, but the European stock, you know, has the same kind of atavistic response to a raccoon that we might to a snake or a spider.
The thing about a raccoon is it's a wild forest animal that is not afraid to live in cities. And in Europe, most...
But to me, that's like a cute bonus. Like, oh, I'm walking down the city street. Oh, and there's a cute little wildlife critter. It's Ranger Rick.
It's super cute, but I think Europe made a real point to exterminate all of the animals that might impede human progress, right? There are no wolves in Europe anymore.
And Germany in the past has taken a very wide stance on what kinds of things you exterminate for the betterment of the species.
That's right. They
have the broadest possible definition.
They are managing their turf, right, pretty carefully. There are some bears in Europe still, in the Carpathian Mountains. You can find a bear.
Do raccoons have predators here they don't there? Or is there just less competition?
There aren't top predators. Raccoon's not going to encounter a wild dog, typically, or a bear, or a... I mean,
what might kill a raccoon here? A coyote, I guess.
A coyote, but I think they generally stay apart. I mean, raccoons don't have a lot of predators, and they're pretty good at, like you say, they mine their beeswax. But in Germany, they're not mining their beeswax. They're
getting out there.
Oh, and they're also not confined to Germany. They've spread all over Europe, and now they're in Spain. They do transmit rabies, so there's some concern that they are disease ridden. And I don't think they've made it across the English Channel yet, although they are good swimmers.
They're almost all the way there right now.
But they're not ocean swimmers, really. But they can spend a lot of time floating in the water. They'll travel far.
That would have to be an accident, like the lemurs arriving in Madagascar on some kind of floating palm and bamboo thing.
Yeah, there are I think fewer animals going across the English Channel on like fallen logs as there might have been 1,000 years ago. I feel like most of the fallen logs are like gathered up now. But raccoons are making their way throughout Europe. They're in Russia. They're all over. And I don't think there's anything that can be done. Although in Germany now and in Europe in general, they are increasingly advocating a zero tolerance policy, like kill them. If you find them, kill them.
We did that here with Canada geese. Like kill all the Canada geese you want. We'll make more.
Yeah, for a while there, we were herding enormous flocks of geese into shipping containers and gassing them.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And then I think using them for food.
That's awful.
That was happening here in Seattle because the geese were just overrunning the town. And of course, there were a lot of people that were very offended that we were gassing geese.
It's because of our deep hatred for Canadians. You're not allowed to put Canadians into a shipping container and gas them. It's frowned upon.
True.
So you got to get that aggression out somewhere.
Well, what we typically do with Canadians is cut off one of their feet, throw it into the ocean, and make them watch.
That'll learn them.
Hobble back up to Vancouver Island and stay out of here.
So our, you know the equivalent of that here? I guess it's not from fur, but there are opossums in the woods of Western Washington. Opossums are native to North America. They're the only marsupial in the New World. But they are not native to this area, and in this case, it was pets that got out.
Can you imagine keeping
a possum
as a pet?
I want the weirdest looking, like, giant rat animal, Mom.
They are so repulsive. I have I had possums here a lot, and I actually got a cat and was standing in the house looking out the back window one time at dusk, and the possum came into the yard. It was a giant possum. And the cat and the possum did do the, like, sheepdog meets the wolf, like, hat tip to each other.
Hey, Ralph.
And I said, what the hey? Like, you're here to do a job.
You got the cat to kill the possum.
No, I got the cat to kill the rat. Okay. And I got the rat to kill the mouse, and I got the mouse to kill the bug, and I got the
bug.
The
problem is you're left with the cat, the worst animal. your plan went wrong when you wound up with a cat.
Yeah, I don't know why I swallowed the fly. But possums and cats just have, they have, like, professional courtesy with one another. And my mom tells a story about feeding her cats here in Kingston, Washington, and that the cat bowl sitting outside would attract raccoons and skunks and possums, and they would all sort of take turns eating out of the food bowl, and they were not competitive with one another, which seems crazy to me.
All these New World animals with the Indian names are the best, like raccoon and skunk. That's so great.
Yeah. Possum.
Even the vegetables, squash, pumpkin. Like, we just have better consonants than anywhere.
We do, and it's why the Germans and Belgians are so interested in our culture. It's not just them, though. Raccoons also now are a plague in Japan.
Really?
And for an even more hilarious reason. In the 1960s, there was a sort of beloved children's story by the author Sterling North called, it was about a raccoon. It was called Rascal. And, it was a popular 60s children's book.
I remember Rascal.
Yeah, there was a Disney movie made about Rascal.
That's what I was going to say.
And then that book, Rascal, became very popular among Japanese school children in the 70s. There was a like a television series, an anime show about Rascal, the hilarious raccoon. And in Japan, there are indigenous to Japan something called the raccoon dog.
Yes, the tanuki.
The tanuki. Which is not a raccoon or even...
They're kind of fox-shaped, but they've got the mask. Mm-hmm. And I think they're more related to actually foxes or some kind of canid.
Yeah, they are.
And in Japanese myth, they have, they kind of loom large in the stories of the Japanese forest.
Yeah, they're kind of magical animals within Japanese magic culture.
There's actually a pretty popular movie by Miyazaki Studio, a beloved children's director of our time. In which the raccoon dogs are trying to defend their forest against developers. And the thing I didn't know about tanuki, in the translation, they just call them raccoons. So you'd be forgiven for thinking they're raccoons, but they're not. They're these dog things. But they fight the developers with their giant scrotums. Or scrota? I don't know.
I guess a pack of scrotums.
A pack of scrota. In Japanese myths, I guess, tanuki can do all these weird shape-changing things with their scrotums. And you can find old, old parchments showing the tanuki just dragging these huge scrotums behind them. So they're using them as parachutes in the movie and like falling down on the backhoes, making them the shapes of all kinds of crazy weapons. It's bizarre. And this is now watched by American children who are like, I think instead of saying scrotum in the translation, they call them raccoon pouches.
Oh yeah. Raccoon pouches.
Just that little raccoon pouch you got between your legs there.
That functions as a parachute. I mean, there are, talk about like a little bit of a cultural difference. We have not imported
scrotums,
magic scrotums from Japan into our children's culture, but I guess it's no stranger than the Confederate flag in Belgium.
Yeah, it's probably more harmless. I mean, children have to learn about raccoon scrotums sometime.
Right. Well, no, but but in this case, yes. But raccoons themselves, American raccoons, the Japanese were already primed for this, you know, for a character like the raccoon.
Because they have these cute raccoon-looking things.
Yeah, and I think tanukis are also sort of tricksters within the magic culture.
If I had a giant scrotum, I'd be a trickster. the pranks would never end.
Speaking as someone who is a trickster, let me tell you, they are related. So in 1977, Japanese school kids so enamored by Rascal that they started to import raccoons to Japan as pets.
The opossum problem.
And raccoon babies are hilarious, and they do seem like they would be great pets. They wash their food, and so they seem very clean, and they seem tidy, and they're curious. But as raccoons grow, they are not good pets. They are wild animals, and they also are wild animals that can use doorknobs.
It's basically like having children.
Yeah, right. Children with claws.
At first they're cute, and they stay where you put them down, and then eventually, yeah, they start to move around. They can use their thumbs to open doors.
Yeah.
They can yell at you.
They can shred your skin off your arm. And so what happened in Japan was that they started to put these once cute, no longer cute animals out. Like, oh, here, why don't we just pretend this never happened? And they kicked them out the door. At one point in the 70s, they were importing 1,500 raccoons a month.
Whoa.
To Japan.
Was this legal?
Well, yeah. Then it was, they were thought of, so they're illegal in many U.S. states to keep as pets.
Yeah, we have pretty strict exotic pets laws here in most states.
But in Europe and in Japan, they were not. You could keep them as a pet.
The legal ecosystem was not ready for them either.
One time in the early 90s, I met a street punk kid that had a baby raccoon on a leash.
Whoa.
Walking down Broadway. And I thought, you know, street punks they're not renowned for their decision-making prowess. And this is an example of a thing that's going to go horribly wrong for both of these creatures. But the raccoon, I think, will survive it better than the street punk.
Today it's ferrets. All the hipsters making bad pet decisions get ferrets.
Ferrets are so smelly.
They're awful.
The thing about the...
We're really insulting a lot of kinds of animals without knowing what the future of the species is. Maybe we should be careful with our...
I'm 100% sure that whoever our listeners are, some of them are ferret owners who are even now composing kind of angry letters about how
great
ferrets
are. Dear sirs, we understand your recordings are all in good fun.
That's right.
But the fun ended at minute 28 of your most recent episode.
When you slurred against the noble ferret.
My pet ferret, Sir Walter Raleigh, appeared to understand what you were saying and reacted in a shocking manner.
The funny thing about raccoons washing their food is that it's actually not true.
Wait, the wash bear doesn't wash?
No.
And it's not a bear.
It's not a bear, and it does not actually wash its food. But what's interesting is studies showed that if you gave a raccoon, like, they don't wash earthworms, for instance.
Oh, it depends on the food?
Well, and if you gave them food but they didn't have water, they would still do the same motions, the same sort of washing motions with the food, but just with no water, dry.
So they're just OCD, basically.
What it is that they have incredibly tactile hands. So
sexy.
Their number one sense is their sense of touch, in particular in their palms. And so they turn things over in their hands to identify them. They identify them not by smell or by sight, but by manipulating them. And what water does is it intensifies the sensitivity of their palms. So they get water on there and it causes the little hairs on their hands to kind of stand up and become more sensitive. So they use water, but as a tool to feel things.
They're foodies, basically. It's kind of like taking a sniff from the bouquet of a glass of wine.
Right. They
or,
just sort of put
or,
the
or taking a selfie of your beautifully plated, you know, whatever it is.
Kale salad. Your beautifully plated kale.
Cornish game hen.
They will also wash things they're not going to eat.
Oh,
just to
stuff?
Just to see what it is. And I think it took people a long time to figure that out because it just seems so natural to us to, that they are washing. We understood the gesture, and so we put a kind of anthropomorphized rationale to it, or you know, we saw it, but not for what it actually was, which is a sense that we don't have it in such acuteness.
I like the idea that you will appreciate your food more if you you know, just play around with it in your fingers first, because kids do that. I'm going to start doing that at restaurants. Like, I'm just going to dip both my hands into my fettuccine and kind of wiggle it around, really enjoy the, all the sensations of the pasta.
Although I don't like having grease on my hands.
You're not a lotion dog?
No, I go to the bathroom immediately and wash off any kind of greasy feeling.
You're a wash bear.
I am a little bit of
that's
a wash and
that's what the gay community says about you.
That's what you can tell from the handkerchief in my back pocket.
And that concludes The Washing Bear. Entry 1411.LV2025, certificate number 29158, in the omnibus. Listeners, if you're still tuned in at this point, you are obviously not future raccoon or ferret mutants who have been offended away.
Well, I think a future raccoon mutant might think, yeah, it's about damn time our story was told.
It's true. If I was a raccoon mutant, this would be my favorite podcast ever.
Yeah, but if I were a ferret mutant...
He's listening to This American Life, and he's like, this hardly is ever about raccoons.
Yeah, right.
If ever.
What about this is of interest to raccoons,
it's called, sir? This American Life, but it should really be called This American Not Raccoon Life. So yeah, this is now your new favorite show. Congratulations. Welcome home.
And also, ferrets, we will do a show about you, and we will restore your good name.
If you raccoon people have developed opposable thumbs to go with your dexterity, you can try to use that to look up social media.
They may be listening to this show through their fingertips, right? They found our platinum records and they're just rubbing
the grooves.
Them, feeling like, Ken and John.
Don't dip it in water though, because we are making the record out of
Alka-Seltzer.
Toffee. Alka-Seltzer. They would love that.
Oh, right.
Briefly. But yeah, as soon as the raccoons develop opposable thumbs, we're just done, right? They already have dexterity. The only thing we have is a thumb.
It's true that they don't have opposable thumbs.
They have their five little claws.
But yeah, and actually they don't have a tremendous amount of like digital dexterity. They use their hands.
It's the only advantage we have right now.
Pause, that's right.
So it's over, basically. At some point, you guys figured out the thumb. You murdered us all. And frankly, we had it coming, based on most of the television I watch.
Rip, rip.
You can use your thumbs to find out about the humans you conquered, their past, on social media. This particular project is at Omnibus Project on every social media platform we could think of. John is at John Roderick on Instagram and possibly on Twitter.
Roderick, but yes, at John Roderick.
I believe it's Roderick. Roderick.
I'll destroy you.
Is John also three syllables?
Jahan.
Jahan Roderick at...
Just because you have the most bland Anglo-Saxon name. My Anglo-Saxon name is 1 degree less bland, but it should not be that confusing.
Jennings just does mean son of John.
Jennings.
But you've been saying it wrong. It's actually Jennings.
Jennings.
Jennings. And I am at Ken Jennings on Twitter. John's on Instagram as well. You could contact us via email, if that's what you're into, at omnibusproject@howstuffworks.com. And we would love to hear your feedback, especially if it's nice.
If it's nice.
If it's mean. If it's nice, I'll send you something nice. If it's mean, John will send you something mean. We're good cop, bad cop.
Well, right. And also, it can be mean, but not mean-spirited. Right? You can say, like...
It can be snarky.
Yeah, it can
we
be snarky.
Love that ironic millennial sense of humor.
Oh, guess what? You guys failed to know the most important part of this story. I mean, you can do that.
We'll feel bad for a second, but we will feel edified when you tell us what we missed.
Yeah, just explain to us what we don't know. That's the best feeling about the internet.
And
also, why don't you give your P.O. box so that if they want to send like gifts...
You're assuming that the mail service is still running in the future. That's your faith.
The United States Postal Service will survive all calamity.
Neither rain nor sleet, nor snow, nor meteor crash,
that's
nor
right.
temporal displacement of millions of years.
That's right.
Will stop them from delivering things back in time. If you would like to send us physical artifacts
let's say, for
of
instance,
your era.
Shrimp forks.
If, for example, you were to want to send John a shrimp fork, because apparently he's short one.
Well, no, I don't want a single shrimp fork.
You want each listener to send you one shrimp fork, which would give you tens of thousands of shrimp forks, and that would kind of consolidate your power.
The thing is, I don't really know what a shrimp fork is. Why would you have a special fork for shrimp?
Does it help peel the shrimp somehow? That's the headache with shrimp.
Well, but I don't want unpeeled shrimp. I go out of my way in life to never be in a situation where someone will serve me an unpeeled shrimp.
You're the anti-raccoon. I'm happy to take the little shrimp in my little paws and worry it and work at it until I get the tail off.
But I don't like greasy stuff on my hands. And also, shrimp just isn't that satisfying.
Don't you have a finger bowl every night at dinner like we do in the Jennings house? if you can send physical artifacts to Omnos Project, P.O. Box 55744, Seattle, WA 98155. You could also...
What, that's the entire address? Just a P.O. Box?
And a zip
and
code.
And a zip code?
I think that's how they work.
Wow.
Although in this case, the post office has recently moved, and now I don't know if 98155 is still the right zip code, but stuff's still getting to me.
Yeah, I'm sure it's fine.
It's very complicated.
They figure out their zip code things.
And you could also, this is the longest one of these ever, by the way, you could also chat with like-minded aficionados. If you're too shy to talk with us and you just want to talk with your raccoon peers, that goes on at the Futurelings group on Facebook.
Future packs of creatures. We have no idea how long our civilization survived. It seems like we are hanging by a thread. We hope and pray that the catastrophe we fear may never come. If the worst comes soon, this recording, like all our recordings, may be our final word, but if Providence allows, we hope to be back with you soon for another entry in the Omnibus.